Welcome to In Conversation With from Devon Chamber, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors, presented by Stuart Elford, recorded at Fresh Air Studios in Plymouth.
Hello there, I'm Stuart Elford, Chief Executive of Devon Chamber of Commerce, with another edition of our In Conversation With podcasts here from Fresh Air Studios in Plymouth. And today I am delighted to say that I am joined by Hannah Sheed from Trevi, the CEO of Trevi. For now, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. It's a wonderful charity. Give us the pitch, the 60-second pitch on what Trevi is, so our listeners know, although I doubt there's many who don't know about Trevi.
Well, I hope not. I think we're fairly well known now. We like to describe ourselves as Plymouth's award-winning women's charity, and we've been here in the city for 31 years, supporting women and their families. Many people will know us for our mother and child rehab. That was our first ever service set up 31 years ago. But since then, we've added to that and we have a women's centre. We have another family centre. We recently opened a house for some supported accommodation for women of complex lives. And we also do outreach. So lots of work here in the city for women and children.
31 years. So yeah. You've been going before I was born.
Oh, sometime.
I wish. And how long have you been there?
I've been there 13 years.
Right.
Funnily enough, there are a few people over the years that have asked me if I was one of the founders, and I've had to politely say no. 31 years ago, I was not a founder.
Take it as a compliment in that I think of Trevi, I think of Hannah Sheed. You are intrinsically linked with the charity, but that is changing. How very dare you?
It is changing. It is.
What's happening?
I obviously went and told the team in person that I was leaving, but we also made a short film. And in it, I talked about how hard it is to move on from something that you love, because I do love Trevi. And it's been, I feel so privileged to have been able to be part of the journey of this amazing charity over 13 years. And it's really hard to know when to step away from something that you love. It's really tricky. My reflection has been that I've had to find the time when the charity is ready. And there's been a couple points over the years where, if I'm honest, I've thought maybe I'm ready for something, yeah. But actually it's not the right time for the charity. And then also when I've felt ready to step into something new. And this year, those two things aligned.
So are you able to tell us what something new is that you're stepping into?
Nothing concrete. There's so many things. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm really passionate about women. I'm so driven to try and make a difference for women. There's a number of things that I want to do in that space. Over the last couple of years at Trevi, we've been doing more and more work with women who are sexually exploited, involved in prostitution. And that's something that I'd like to see more change around beyond Plymouth. So I volunteer for another charity and I want to be able to do more work around women exploited through the sex trade. So yeah, there's a few things that I've got some ideas around, and I feel that, yeah, I want to be able just to try some things, do a bit more activism. And I guess at Trevi, we often talk to women about being brave, and I feel it's maybe my time to do that and just go for it.
It sounds a very passionate, powerful word, activism. What do you mean by activism?
So I would probably describe that as getting stuff done.
GSD, stuff done.
Absolutely. It's really interesting. I was thinking just over the weekend, actually, I went to a conference on Saturday, not with my Trevi hat on, but with my slightly more activist hat on. I was on the very early train Saturday morning. I got back late Saturday night and I just felt so fired up because I thought, this is where I want to be. This is making change. And I was surrounded by a lot of survivors, women who've been through the sex trade, who've exited, and just talking to them and just realising there's so much still to be done. And there's something about being able to speak really candidly about that and to try and make change happen. And I feel, yeah, I want to be able to give my all to that and hopefully make a difference.
I was fortunate enough to be invited to an event by Gifted Women. This was at the Methodist Central Hall. Were you there recently?
No, I was in London, yeah.
There was a lady there, former prostitute, who told her story. And I don't think there was a dry eye in the house. You know, it's very easy to hear prostitute and have an image conjured up in your head of this person and how they got to where they got. But listening to the stories was incredibly powerful and really Whew, moving. A great charity doing great things, as of course Trevi is. And Trevi's kind of synonymous with all things supporting women in the city. You've done a lot of work around violence against women and girls.
We have, and I think what's been really interesting is we sort of began very much as a charity working with women in recovery. So our work was around women with drug and alcohol addiction. And what we've started to realise, and what we've realised is actually the drug and alcohol addiction in many cases is almost a symptom of other issues and traumas. And when you look beneath the surface, women are using substances because of other things that have happened to them, other things they've experienced. And when we opened our women's centre, we had more women coming to us. Many of them had never used drugs and alcohol, but were survivors of different trauma, different experiences. And we thought, actually, we need to broaden our remit here because there's so many more women. And it can feel quite bleak sometimes when you look at the statistics and when you see the lived reality for women and women in our city. And I love that Plymouth is so active around this space and are so keen to make a difference, but it still is a massive issue and a reality for many women.
Still lots to do. I mean, Plymouth has seen more than its fair share of tragedy around this, hasn't it? Let's think of the positives. Can you share a specific moment at Trevi where you feel your work was truly making a difference? You know, probably every day, but I mean, is there someone, perhaps, I mean, you obviously don't tell us their name, but someone you think, wow, I'm really proud of that. That made a huge difference.
Oh, I mean, Stuart, 13 years, there are so many. And that's the reality. Again, you know, I said at the beginning how I feel really sort of blessed to have been in this role. And part of it is because I've been able to be witness to so many women's journeys and children. There are children that I know now who I knew as sort of babes in arms and, you know, they no longer are. And I think there are so many cases. One that I often think about, and I guess this is that sort of almost the sliding doors moment that a service such as Trevi can provide. We had a woman come to us years ago and she came from a London borough and it was her first child and she'd been straight from hospital. Baby was days old and they put mother and baby in a cab and they came from London in this taxi. They arrived late at night at Plymouth and we were all there waiting for them to arrive. And they arrived and she'd never been to Plymouth before with the baby. And the baby, he was lovely, but he was always crying, a bit of a very unsettled baby. To begin with, the staff would sometimes sort of try and take the baby and settle the baby for her. And we were like, nope, she has to learn to settle this baby. So in the end, we just stepped back. She learned to settle her baby, as we do. And she just was totally in love with her son. And you'd see her walking around. It became a bit of a joke because she was always holding her baby, looking at him because she was just so in love with her son. And we used to say, careful, don't trip up. You know, she was a bit of a sort of, you know, health and safety hazard. Anyway, long story short, she left with him. But I often think what the alternative might have been for a woman like this, because if she hadn't have come to us and the son had gone into foster care, she'd have been seeing him. And it's not uncommon for women to maybe see their child maybe three times a week for a couple of hours in that contact session. And I think of her in that contact session with her baby, and he would have been crying and unsettled. And she probably would have left that feeling totally hopeless, awful, just thinking all that they're saying about me is true. I am not good enough to be his mother. She inevitably would have used substances. And I couldn't imagine anything else that you would do, feeling that level of pain and shame. And I could see that she would leave that contact, use substances, it would unravel. And the likelihood of her ever being reunited with her son would be just significantly diminished. And we know that of the children that get removed, only 1 in 10 ever return. And when I think of cases like that, I can absolutely understand how and why that would play out like that. And what we also know is that a third of women who have children removed go on to have more babies. And she was a young woman. She would have gone on to have another baby. And then we'd be in that terrible cycle that we see. So I often think about her as a case of someone who it could have looked so different if she hadn't have had that chance.
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, you've just triggered a memory of mine. I did 17 years in the police service. And one of the most difficult jobs I ever did was to go and remove three children from their mother and father. And we were sent along. I was on a specialist unit at the time because the father was known to be extremely violent and he knew we would be coming. Looking back, I mean, to his credit, he knew what would happen if he was there. So he left the house. Yeah. The mother was obviously extremely upset.
But we delivered these children to a foster care, and I remember the foster carer to the day I die, this lovely, it's difficult to describe, maternal woman. She'd had them before as fosters, and they came running up to her. She gave them a big cuddle, and I thought, they're definitely in a better place. But I asked one of the child protection team later, you know, why were we removing? And then I was told, and then I realised it was definitely the right decision, but it was an awful thing to have to do. So I can't imagine to be going through it. It must be dreadful. As you say, that's probably going to lead to a cycle of leaning on something, whether it's alcohol or some other substance. Terrible.
People ask me about what are our outcomes and how successful are we? And we always say, actually, our understanding of success isn't always about how many families stay together. I mean, obviously, we love it when that happens, but actually it's about families having that chance, a fair chance to stay together, because sometimes it's not in a child's interest to stay if they can't be safe. But actually, we've got to do all we can to give them a chance and to try and set them up to succeed, not set them up to fail. And sadly, too often our system will set families up for failure, not success.
Absolutely. And I suppose what you want is good outcomes.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It does matter. Sorry, I don't want to be flippant, but sometimes the outcome may be better one way, maybe better the other way. It's not set journey.
Yeah, well, I'd say I want to be able to look that child in the eye 18 years later and say the system didn't let you down. And we work with a lot of women who the system let them down. And some of those women will say they should have been removed from a family home and they weren't, because that's the reality. Some women will say I was left somewhere where I wasn't safe and I wasn't protected. But we will work with many other women who did go into the care system and then their experience of the care system was not a good one. And understandably, some of their fear around services, I totally get it, because they've not been able to trust services. My hope is that we aren't letting families down. We're giving them that opportunity.
Do they see you as separate to that? Do they see you as a service that is publicly provided, or do they think Trevi is a safe space?
Yeah, a safe space. And people will describe us as being almost, it's like a sort of a family thing, that the family's not perfect, but they are, the people. Yeah, they are, they are.
Yeah.
And there's a quote that I used when we started doing the feasibility paper for Blossom, which is our house for women with complex lives here in the city. And the phrase I used, I just loved. It said, home is the place. And then the longer version of that quote is, home is the place that when you have to go there, they have to take you in. And there's something about that. Your family are the people that when you need them, they step up. And that's what we try and offer at Trevi. And we have women that have been through our service that phone us up years later because a problem has come up or they've got this issue and they've just picked up the phone and reconnected for that help and support.
The conversation continues shortly. But first, Stuart Elford and the Chamber of Secrets.
Hello there and welcome to the section of the show, the very dramatically titled Stuart Elford's Chamber of Secrets, dum, 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 where we ask a guest on our podcast to delve into the box of questions that have been submitted by you, the listeners. And today I'm joined by the Lord Lieutenant of Devon, David Thurston. David, delve into the box.
Right. What a long one.
Oh my.
What's the one thing no one listening to this podcast will know about you?
Oh my goodness, this could be interesting.
I got to play cricket against India.
Wow.
And I got 6 wickets in the first innings.
Now that is pretty cool. I'll give you that one. David Thurston, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Follow Devon Chamber on X at chamber_Devon and search for us on LinkedIn. Make sure you don't miss out on future episodes. Hit subscribe now. In Conversation With, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Now, back to the conversation.
As you prepare to move on, what legacy do you want to leave or have you left?
Oh, that's a big question, isn't it? I actually gave my management team some baubles last Christmas that just said, women on a mission. And that is how it feels sometimes. And so I know that the team at Trevi will carry on being women on a mission. And yeah, I guess my hope is that I've been part of that. There's lots of ideas for the future for Trevi. And I just like the idea that one day I'll be somewhere and I'll say, oh, I was part of that once. And it's just lovely to have been part of the journey of such an amazing organisation.
It'll be hard, won't it? I remember I was chair of St Luke's for 7 years and a trustee for 10. And I had to leave at the end. You know, my time was up. I'd done my tenure and time to move on. And for months afterwards, I'd see a post or something on social media and think, well, they didn't tell me about that. And then think, hang on, Miss Chip, they don't have to. You're not involved anymore. You know, it's none of your business. So giving up your baby. But I'll always be passionate about that. So it'll never go, will it?
It doesn't. And I absolutely will always support and love Trevi.
So before we move on from Trevi, two quick questions. The quickest question, why Trevi? I know Trevi is a fountain. Why was it called Trevi?
It is the fountain. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the story is, I'm not sure how much I believe it, but part of it is definitely true.
Yeah.
So the idea is that the founders, and our little claim to fame, as you may know, is one of our founders, is Dawn French's mother, Roma French.
I didn't know that.
Oh, there you go. No.
I knew Dawn was from Plymouth.
Yeah.
She records her Titting About podcast in this very studio.
Well, does she now?
She does.
Well, her mum is one of our founders.
Right.
And one of the many things I love about Trevi, it was local people that saw a gap and just thought, right, what are we going to do? So they went to Rome. They sat by the Trevi Fountain and they had these sort of ideas of serenity and peace. And then said, let's call it Trevi House. But then, number one, I've heard that the Trevi Fountain is not particularly serene or peaceful.
No, apparently it's chaos every time you go there. Someone was telling me.
Yeah.
Claire Baker was telling me she'd been there and it was utter chaos.
I'd love to go there one day.
Yeah.
But I also know that often life at Trevi is not peaceful or serene either.
Bet.
So, but there we go. That's the story.
Before we move on from Trevi, then, what do you think still needs to be done in that space? Empowering women within communities, that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's probably the same answer you would get from many people when you have these charity conversations, but it's around sustainable funding. I think that's something I'd really like to see. Lots of our funding is fairly short term and it's really hard. We're talking about long term change. The work we do at Trevi, we're breaking intergenerational cycles. How on earth do you do that when you're getting short term funding? So I'd love to somehow see a longer term funding arrangement that meant we could then just get stuck in and do the work, and then you've not got me and my team spending our time when we could be doing the work instead raising money to do the work. That's what I'd love to see.
And how do you make it, I mean, it's a very serious subject, how do you make it fun? How do you make it enjoyable? How do you inject lightheartedness into what must be a very serious subject? Because you strike me as a fun person. You're always smiling and happy. You don't come in here all gloom and doom.
No, it's joyful. I like to base myself across all the services. Have laptop, will travel. I don't have an office. Wherever I am, you will hear women laughing because we all have the capacity to laugh, don't we? And I think that there's something, the connection that women find in our spaces. For some of them, it's the first time they've had that connection. Whether I'm sat at the Women's Centre listening to them either playing games or doing karaoke or maybe doing a crafting session and just laughing, or whether I'm sat in the residential or hearing children. And I think there is, in amidst all the challenge and what's really hard, there is also the capacity for humans to find joy.
Absolutely. I can't remember which comedian. I think it was Ricky Gervais said, the more serious the subject, the more you have to laugh about it because it gives you power over it. You know, if you can't laugh, then it's all gone terribly wrong, isn't it? So I understand you're a single mum of three, is that
right? That's right.
How do you find time to be a charity leader, balance? You know, you've got a lot going on.
Well, I mean, you do know the saying, if you want something done, ask a busy woman.
Person,
it is true.
A busy woman. It has to be a woman, does it? Because men can't do anything.
Well, I have to be honest, my working life is working with busy women and they are very
impressive. I'm being deliberately provocative. Sorry, that's very cruel,
that's
isn't it?
But
I picked up on it. Sort of serious question, really.
Yeah.
I guess you're dealing with women who are often in the position they're in because of men. Oh, I don't know how to ask this politely. We might cut this out. I don't know. It's something.
Go on, ask it. Be brave, Stuart.
Do you hate men then?
I love men.
Do you think all men?
Not at all.
Are nasty? Is that a really awful question?
No, that's
but
a really,
as a man, I want to know that.
Stuart,
answer.
That's a really important question to ask. And don't worry, I'm not going to say, you know, some of my best friends are men, although one of my longest standing friends is a man. Yeah. I guess I'd say a few things. Two of my three children are boys, and they are boys growing into young men, 16 and 14. Right. The work that I do, it could be easy to develop quite a dim view of men.
Generally, yeah.
But I can't afford to. I'm raising boys and I have to raise them to be good men. And that's been a really important thing for me, but something that I really value. Just yesterday, my 14-year-old had a load of his mates over and all of these lads, lovely lads, quite noisy, carrying on around the house. And I thought, we've got to get to a place where men and women can work together. And I meet a lot of men who are desperately concerned about what they're seeing happening to women that they love. They are desperately worried about their daughters and they don't always know where to put themselves in this space. And they want to be part of calling some stuff out and part of making a difference. But they're a bit nervous about getting in the way of women in that. And I understand how hard it can be for men to know where to put themselves in this place. And I think we have to, in this, just work together and have a bit of compassion and understanding from both sides.
I worry that in every way in life lately, we're becoming polar. Totally. You have to be either very right or very left, very black, very white. You have to have a strong opinion one way. The genders seem to be being pushed further apart in some ways. I went to a conference. It was a good conference. I'm glad I went, but they were encouraging men to be positive in their masculinity and how to be sort of a good man, I suppose. What was telling was 80% of the room was women.
Yeah.
And when I asked a question, I'm not going to go into the details of it, but I asked a question about why was this taken the wrong way? I was trying to do the right thing. Why was it taken the wrong way? And I've got to say, I was really put off by one of the ladies. She so smug looked at me. Oh, Stuart, you just don't understand. I thought, I'm trying to understand. I've asked the question because I want to know the answer. But it made the divide even bigger, it seemed. Thankfully, there was another lady sat next to her who said, I think we shouldn't berate people who are trying to learn. And I just felt it's sometimes difficult. So I'm so grateful you took that question well, because I don't mean to offend anyone. I'd be mortified if I upset anyone. But sometimes I want to know, and you're only going to know if you ask the question.
My team say it's a terrible analogy. Other members of the team really like it. But I sometimes say it's a bit like the Cats Protection League, that we're protecting cats, but we still really like dogs. And some of us even have dogs.
I like that.
And I guess that in really wanting to support and protect women, it's really hard, Stuart, because the reality is when we look at male violence, I mean, the clue's in the name, you know, men are predominantly the perpetrators of violence against women, but they're also the perpetrators of violence against men. And I think that being able to have some of the sort of difficult, uncomfortable conversations is the only way we're ever going to move it along. Sometimes I will go to meetings or I'll be in spaces where I'm surrounded by people who all think the same thing as me and will all say the same stuff. And it can be
echo chamber.
Yeah. I can leave that feeling really like, these are my people. But actually, I also need to be in spaces where people have some different opinions and where some of my beliefs get challenged. And it's only by thinking about some of those things and having those conversations we'll ever move it along, because we have to. We have to see progress.
Yeah, I think for me, the sad thing was I was trying to find common ground.
Yeah.
And a big wedge was being driven between the two. And I think I will never, ever condone violence in any way, shape or form. I wonder if some of the violence we're seeing is because some men have no way of expressing, no way of discussing, no way of venting. They're stuck in a culture of machismo, and we've got to get rid of that rubbish and talk about these things. So I'm just really keen that we talk about them in an open way.
Yeah, and this is the bit about how we make sure that men feel part of the conversation and how we do it in a way that they feel able to be part of change. As soon as people feel they can't be part of positive change, then there's a risk.
Well, I asked again at the same conference, I said to one of the ladies who said to me, what do you think of this? I said, it's great. I said, but there should be more men here. She took that to be a bad thing. And she said, oh, well, what are you saying, that women can't come to this? I said, no, they're completely the opposite. I'm saying more men should hear what you've been saying. Some of what I was told was incredibly powerful, massive learning experience, took it on board. I wanted more men to hear the message. But this slightly polar kind of aggressive him-her thing, which I absolutely hate.
And no one will win when we pit up against each other.
The conversation continues shortly. But first, the 60-second charity pitch.
My name is Ian Smith. I'm from Food Plymouth, the city's local sustainable food partnership. We're all about joining up food in all its forms around the social, economic and environmental dimensions of that. We've been going since 2010. We're members of Plymouth Chamber and very happy to be involved in that work. One of the things that we do is work around food support, food aid, with the Plymouth Food Aid Network, which is a very important expression of what we do, but there's much more to it than that. So we would like to meet and talk with and work with anyone operational in the food space in Plymouth to join everything up as best we can. It's a partnership and a network model. So the partners and the network are absolutely vital to everything that goes on. And we deliver collective impact by joining all of that together to create the best benefits.
Follow Devon Chamber on X at @chamber_Devon and search for us on LinkedIn. Make sure you don't miss out on future episodes. Hit subscribe now. In Conversation With, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Now, back to the conversation.
My middle son, I mean, it is funny, he drew a picture of me a year or two ago.
Yeah.
It is. Basically, I look quite angry and I've got this speech bubble and it just says women, women, women. And sometimes like, oh, heavens, you know. And I have to say to him and I say to my other kids, it's not only focused on women. You know, I'd like everyone to feel safer, happier. Yeah.
Good. So moving away from Trevi, slightly towards lighthearted, yeah. I understand one of the ways you relax and chill, I suppose, and chill being the operative word, is sea swimming.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a terrible cliche, isn't it? I mean, you find any woman of my age, that's what we do. And I was talking to someone recently, it's like, why is it that women seem to enjoy this so much? And I don't have the answer, but it's absolutely something that I've loved doing for a few years now and so lucky being here in Devon.
I don't get it. No, I do get it in the sense that the couple of times I've done it, I have felt better when I get out. But people say, oh, you always feel better when you get out. And I think, well, that's like saying if I jab myself in the leg with a fork, when I stop, I'll feel better. But in all seriousness, it is known to be good for your mental health, isn't it?
It is, Stuart, but I must make a confession.
This isn't your full moon.
No,
I've got a question about in a minute, but go on. Sorry, your confession is?
My confession is that I went away for a weekend with a girlfriend a couple months ago to Mallorca, and I spent a whole weekend of, we were just in and out of a warm sea. It was just beautiful. And I did think, oh dear.
And you've got to come back to the freezing cold.
Suddenly, Mother Cub in February isn't. Yeah, that's my local. That's my sort of local. And that just
didn't have quite the same
appeal. Quite the same appeal after I've been sort of bobbing around in the sort of a warm sea. And I thought, oh, heavens, you know, all of this stuff about good for your mental health. Well, actually, I think it's slightly better for my mental health to be in a beautiful, warm country swimming in warm water. But hey,
I'm with you on that. Was this about full moon dips? Now, please tell me it's not meaning without cozy. It means...
It absolutely means about the cozy.
Does it?
Yes. It means when the moon is up and the moon is out. So, yeah, absolutely.
Same. It is a full moon on both.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave that there. Right. You've started a candle making business with your son.
We have. So my son, he is...
This is a 16-year-old.
No, this is the 14-year-old.
The 14-year-old. Yep. You're starting him in entrepreneurship young.
Oh, well.
The Chamber will approve, yes.
Yeah, my 16-year-old, he's quite academic. He's a mathematician. Mm-hmm. My middle one, it's all about the dollar. So he currently has a paper round, and the pay for a paper round is...
It's awful, yeah.
It's not great. It's very hard to unionise, we found. So he's up every morning, bless him, at 6:30, doing his paper round, and he wants an exit strategy. So we've done a brownie making business. There's been a few different ventures, and the current one is candle making, which I have to say... is this whole new world. And it's been wonderful for me because rather than sitting in bed doom scrolling around American politics
or... Oh God, don't get me started.
You need to get on the candle making forums. They are just...
They
are my safe space. They're not all positivity because they get very cross when someone is new to candle making and is ready to go out and start selling without doing lots of rigorous testing. And you do get a little bit of sort of, the candle making community do not approve. But if you post a picture of your candle, they'll tell you what's right, what's wrong. Oh, it's beautiful.
Really? How bizarre.
Really?
Who's the CEO of the candle making business?
Oh, that is the controversial area to get into.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say me.
What would your
My
son
Arthur
say?
Would probably disagree.
He's Arthur, is he?
Arthur, yeah. He might disagree.
Yeah,
we've got a few artistic differences. At the moment, we're making them in teacups. They do look lovely.
I'm sure.
Yeah,
I need
yeah.
to see one of these candles.
Yeah.
I was asking really because, I mean, leadership is in your blood in the sense that you are also probably the highest of all your achievements. You're actually a beaver leader.
Well, I mean, that is...
You've made it.
I was actually on the parade walking with the beavers for Remembrance Sunday.
Beavers for how old?
Beavers are 6 through till 8, I think. 6.5 through till 8.
Is that
eight.
Kind of pre-brownies then or
it's
different
It's pre-cubs.
Thing?
I don't know how old brownies are.
No,
it's
I
probably
don't.
Similar. It is, quite frankly, carnage every Wednesday evening. But they're lovely.
Cats
they are.
Would be easier to hurt.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I sort of stepped into. I wouldn't say I was tricked into, but certainly I sort of found myself beaver leadering, not anticipating quite what I'd be doing.
Do you find a CEO of an organisation, you tell someone to do something, they do it, but if you're CEO of beavers, they just don't? Is that more frustrating?
They don't. But they're lovely. It's lovely seeing, you know, this lovely group of kids. Yeah, it's great. I enjoy it.
Yeah, lovely. Now, I've got a couple of interesting facts about you, and I'm going to test you on one of them because I'm not sure I believe this. So you've described it as the police alphabet that you know.
Yeah.
It's the NATO phonetic alphabet, but I'll let you call it police. There's 17 years in the police, I can say. So can you phonetically do your name?
Right. Hotel Alpha, November, November, Alpha Hotel.
Keep going.
Sierra Hotel, Echo Alpha Delta.
Yeah, all right, sorry.
And I didn't even practice.
You didn't?
No. Do you know, I was taught it when I was 16. Someone taught it to me. And my children say to me sometimes, what did you do before you had mobile phones? And the reality is we just had to find other ways to amuse ourselves. And I used to catch a bus from Topsham into Exeter, because I was at Exeter College. And I used to sit on the bus and I used to look at the signs on the bus, so where it says no standing, blah, blah, blah. And I would just do the November, Oscar, yeah. Sierra, Tango, Alpha, November, Delta, Indigo, yeah. November, Golf.
India,
yeah.
Not Indigo.
India, November, Golf. And that's how I learned it.
I'm so pernickety, aren't I? I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm suddenly so...
No,
got to get it right.
Stuart, we're all work in progress. I'm always open to feedback.
Okay. That's one of the fun things in the police. It's terrible. You should never make fun of someone who's trying when they're new, but when you hear a probationer on the radio trying to read out a number plate and they forget the letter for something and there's a pause and then it's kind of like, it's Alpha, Bravo, Nuts, 1, 3, 4.
Right,
like,
come on then, Stuart. Let's hear you do your name.
Sierra Tango Uniform Alpha Romeo Tango Echo Lima Foxtrot Oscar Romeo Delta.
Very good. There we are.
I did do it for 17 years. I mean, it's stuck in you. I wish I could remember useful things, Hannah. I can't remember anything useful. People tell me I've got a photographic memory for film quotes and things. And if something reminds me of a quote that somebody famous has said, the guys here at Fresh Oak, they're going to put together a Christmas special of all my terrible quotes from Barack Obama and things like this. But I can remember things like that. But ask me something important that, you know, I need to know at any given time. I've got a clue. A terrible memory for that. And I think probably my last question, which is, I don't know if this is embarrassing or not. I don't know why it should be embarrassing, but you had a famous boyfriend.
I did.
I'm going to give clues and see if anyone gets it. So dresses like a geography teacher.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably about right.
Well, that's how he described himself. And makes people laugh.
Yeah.
Did he make you laugh?
Well, do you know, I only found out probably about 4 or 5 months ago, who it was.
So you went out with this guy and you didn't know. We'd better tell people who it is. So it's Marcus Brigstocke.
Marcus Brigstocke.
The comedian.
Yeah. Who I met this guy when I was, I don't know, maybe at Boxes or Lemon Grove somewhere, one of the clubs in Exeter. Oh. And we met, we exchanged letters for a while.
Oh, how very old-fashioned.
I know, isn't it lovely? And the funny thing is, I was having a bit of a clear out a few months ago and I found this box of letters. And I'd had these lovely typed letters from Marcus, and they were ever so funny because he talks about going rollerblading through London parks. And he says in it, you know, so like when I'm older, I want to either be a film director or something or another. And they had made me sort of chuckle. Then I read them again. And then I found another one of my diaries, as you do when you're a sort of 17-year-old. You write a list of all the sort of people that you fancy. You work out which one of your boyfriends are you going to... And there I'd written Marcus Brigstocke. And I was,
I know that name.
And I did a bit of cross-referencing. And he'd written, my date of birth is this. So I did a bit of a Google and I was, how about it? There you go.
How bizarre. So when was the last time you saw him?
Probably some point in the 90s.
Which is 25 years onwards ago. Well, I've got a surprise for you. Because these guys at Fresh Air Studios are very connected, if you look at this screen here, you're about to get a message from your... Oh, no, you're not.
I'm sorry.
That was cruel. If I thought about it, we probably could have done, but no, that would have been really cruel.
I'm really glad
cruel.
You didn't.
No, sorry. That was very, very cruel. What a terrible way to end an interview. So let's not end it there then. So what's on the bucket list?
Oh, that's a good question. Definitely I'd like to do a bit of travelling. I'd like to just go and see some places, do some things. Work-wise, definitely I want to see a change around the support women can get when they're involved in prostitution. I'd love to see some quite big change in that respect. So that's where I'll be sort of putting my energy.
Brilliant. Well, look, you're always really passionate about your subject. I've seen you speak a few times at various events and keep thinking we must get you on the podcast. I think I've mentioned it for a year or two and we finally made it happen.
Finally did it.
Thank you so much and good luck with the future, whatever that's going to hold. You've been kind of slightly coy about that, but I'm intrigued where you're going to pop up next. Wherever it is, I'm sure you will be a raging success.
Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you very much, Hannah Sheed.
In Conversation With is supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. With 16 offices across the Southwest, Westcott's are always on hand to give clear, calm, and expert advice. Westcott's, we're here. Produced by Fresh Air Studios, full audio and video production services for business podcasts and corporate events. Visit freshairstudios.com. Presented by Stuart Elford. Produced by Paul Philpott. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video production by Mark Stevenson. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Copyright Devon Chamber and Fresh Air Studios Limited. All rights reserved.